Thank you all for being here. Good to see you. I'm afraid I've brought a very scritchy voice tonight. It seems to be wanting to quit on me, so I hope it doesn't. I want to thank Joan and Jimmy, of course, and all of you for coming. I want to read from three books tonight. The first book of poetry I published, I did after my youngest daughter died of cancer. It's called The Duration of Grief. I want to read two poems from that. This poem is called Never, and the epigraph comes from King Lear, who says, when his daughter dies, she'll never come again. Never, 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 never. It takes more than six nevers for never to be real. Lear said never and died. Kent praised those who would not upon the rack of this tough world stretch him out longer. Lear's rack was royalty. It's never clear why a man with power is loved. Two daughters were greedy for kingdoms. Virtuous Cordelia was, for this reason, suspect. When I taught Lear, one student was beside himself. It was so unfair, needless for Cordelia to die. No necessity of plot, a screw-up, nothing more. The lesson Lear learns, limits of his power, storm on his naked skin, impotence of rage. He learns of arbitrary death. His daughter, dead because an order went wrong. Dead because a gene or cell went wrong. Some poison in soil or air to profit a king of industry. She'll never come again. Never, 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 never. And this is the title poem. I'm sorry about my throat. It's just not behaving tonight, so I hope it'll manage. This is the title poem for the book, The Duration of Grief. She is everywhere, cobalt bowl with white rabbit, loping in moonlight, clear amber earrings brought back from a tour in Mexico, saved email messages, people, so many, who ask, how are you? How's Katie? It's not that we forget, not likely. He says he doesn't revel in the danger of his power tools now. I write verse, postponing prose. And yet, on Mother's Day, I was again startled. How could it be that my child had died of a disease other people get? This poem comes from this little book of poetry, Way Station, which was published by Finishing Line Press. House of the World. My husband went to Martin Luther King's March on Washington, the rightful demand by Americans of African descent for full civil rights. 9 months pregnant, I didn't want to give birth at the reflecting pool. We took six-week-old Andy with us to stand outside the old executive office building in gray November to salute the murdered JFK, who had fired us to do good works in the larger world. With Andy, a year old, to Kathmandu, where my husband worked for USAID, and I finished my dissertation on George Eliot, learned the many-templed city before it was riddled with tourists. Pregnant with Marie, we'd left Washington, where the obstetrician said, "You can't have a baby in Nepal. No one has babies in Nepal." But I gave birth to Marie in an old Rana palace in Kathmandu, doctored just back from an elephant ride in the jungle called Terai. Then to Kanpur, India, storied city on the Ganges, where Bob organized an international seminar I taught at IIT Kanpur. Pregnant with Emily, moved to Pittsburgh, where we both taught and raised kids and took them with us to march downtown from the hill, mourning the murdered Martin Luther King. I think I have to pause to blow my nose, which runs nearly all the time now that I'm an old lady. I'm going to read next from my most recent book of poems called The Solid Earth is a Restless Place. It has beautiful covered art that's a painting of the Wasatch Mountains of Utah, which is where I grew up. And if you look very closely at it, you can see little scribbled notes, which must be the artist's note to himself. For example, there's one that says shadow, and a few other little notes. But I love the idea that it's a work in progress. So I want to read the title poem, The Solid Earth is a Restless Place. Ogden Canyon walls tilt up, vertical, angled. My father said they'd been laid down layer upon layer, once under ocean, then thrust up by volcanic activity. The solid earth, he told us, is a restless place, gripped by subterranean forces, upending, settling, tectonic shifts that deposited the shells of sea animals high up in the Wasatch Mountains. We drove up through the folded, tilted rock walls to Snow Basin, where we skied, learning on School Hill, graduating to steeper Wildcat, turning down from the top of the ski lift, where years later an avalanche hit my father, buried him 6 feet deep in snow. His companions searched for him until they were too tired to keep probing. He lay there all night, his body dug out the next day when the snow had settled, brought down by toboggan. But I wonder if he'd have preferred to leave his bones with those ancient bones already absorbed, transformed, preserved in the Wasatch Mountains. I'm sorry, my voice just isn't behaving itself tonight. It's kind of going in and out. Illegal immigrants. You must count me as one, Cornish great-grandfather who came to take the gold out of mountains of Northern California, one Swedish grandfather, one German, 14 to 15 kids, one Cornish grandmother, one English, all immigrants to a land between two oceans, inhabited by what we now call native peoples, or Indians, as Columbus said, thinking he had found that continent full of riches he could take. The indigenous people's history about which I'm reading upends my sense of patriotism. And I'll finish with the last poem in the book, which I didn't realize until I tried to read it aloud long after it was published, that it's pretty much all one sentence, so it takes some huffing and puffing. We lived in Ephraim, Utah, 1945, population 1,000. There's a footnote here that says I've just checked Ephraim's population in 2017. It's now 6,135. Still not a large city. We lived in Ephraim, Utah, 1945, population 1,000. Chris Jansen's was the general store that had what you wanted, the week's groceries, lockers to store slaughtered venison, a quarter cow, darning eggs to make the heads of marionettes, emery boards, socks, jeans, and flannel shirts, embroidery thread, hoops, needles, the most beautiful caramel-colored corduroy jumper of my second-grade dreams. Next to the post office Forest Service building on Main Street, wide enough for four covered wagons abreast. Across from a real gray stone Carnegie Library that had all 36 Oz books. Near Doc Anderson's house, where he always said, "Poor little thing," when he gave you a shot. The movie theater down the street that showed a movie every couple of weeks. The elementary school with three grades in one classroom. And we put blackout curtains in the windows, collected tin cans for the war effort. The place we lived one winter when I learned to milk, and we churned butter, where the baby cedar waxwing fell out of its nest, and I fed him chopped egg on a toothpick's wide end, and he rode my shoulder to school, till one day he flew off to join a flock of migrating waxwings overhead. Thank you.